Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9 to 5 for a 5 to 9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Sports Radio 610 presents The Drive with Sterner and Hughley.
No Ron the Show Hughley. No Clint Sterner.
No?
No, he couldn't hack it after Arkansas coughed up the chance to go to the title game last night. That's why he's not here.
I bet Clint flashback to Nam on that one.
Man.
No?
Flashback to something.
Johnny just had a flashback.
To
and a revelation.
What? What did I flash back to?
Was it yesterday or the day before? Sean posed the question of if you were available to just go out and connect with whatever person you wanted.
I am. Go on.
What is the oldest you would go to?
Oh, there's a lot of factors there.
There are. And Sean had some reservations about the number, you know, starting with something higher than a 4.
Really?
Yeah.
I've fallen and I can't get up.
Now all you need is a, where's the beef? Now, Hannah Storm just came on TV.
Ooh, Hannah's a bad girl now.
Hannah Storm is 63.
And looking good.
Gorgeous.
And Sean just decided, well, that's the new number.
I said, damn, man, Hannah Storm still gets it, man.
Can't argue with the logic.
She looks great. And PC thought she was 50-something. I didn't say anything, but I thought she was a little older than that. And then he told me, 63. I'm like, yep, there you go.
I wouldn't have guessed that.
There is the line in the sand right there, 63. Hannah Storm. And then when she's 64, there's the line in the sand right there.
But yeah, that does not mean it's like a blanket cover-all age cutoff line.
Absolutely
like,
not.
Let me tell you who does You're not right. look 63. That would be Hannah Storm.
No. Yeah. Friend of the show, by the way, Hannah Storm. Mm. Been on a few times with us. Mm-mm-mm. Her and them legs.
She is fantastic. So that was the revelation and the flashback that you were
talking
about.
And then
about.
There's Field Yates, who has a very punchable face.
It's the hair. It's the hair with Field Yates now. He's doing the whole long, like,
he definitely has
David Carr long hair thing.
The wiener with hair look.
Yeah.
Definitely not got the legs Hannah does.
You know, like, David Carr is one of the most punchable sports figures maybe ever.
Pretty sure he got punched plenty while he was playing for the Texans.
Yeah, well, no, he ran out of bounds more than any other Texans quarterback because he didn't want to get hit.
He got hit enough times being sacked, didn't he?
He was like, yeah, screw this, I'm out of here. But yeah, Derek, you know, the guys that just slick the hair back, I don't know, I just want to punch him in
the
throat.
Dude, that's kind of, he's got like a mullet going on. Look how long that hair is there.
Yeah, it doesn't look good.
No, it doesn't.
That look kind of went out in like 1988, bruh.
Yeah.
Hannah, get on him.
I mean, unless you're playing NHL hockey and you're from Canada, can't do a mullet.
Does ESPN not have stylists? Come on.
Who was that really great hockey coach that worked for ESPN?
Barry Melrose.
Barry Melrose. Yeah, he had the mullet thing going on.
I liked Barry.
Yeah, he was good.
Yeah, he was funny.
He was good. Would you guys...
That is the extent of what Sean knows about hockey, by the way.
Same.
Barry Melrose. And the other fella that used to host SportsCenter. Now he is the play-by-play guy.
Steve Levy.
That guy. Yeah, I liked him before he did hockey.
He was funny.
Yeah, he was funny. I saw this article. We probably all got this email for those of you that check the company email on a regular like I do, only to very quickly delete them because none of them pertain to me.
I think all three of us right here probably do pretty regularly. Clint, Ron, no.
I got this email yesterday from NFL.com, and it was teams that had the best offseason, teams to improve the most this offseason in the NFL. And you know this, I talk about it all the time. Not this offseason, but the two prior, I felt like the Texans were at the top, if not near the top of the list for what they did in free agency and the draft. But
well, they went from second worst record in the league to 10 wins, division title.
Sure. But
then they went to, you know what? We're going to do the exact same thing, except we're going to do it without an offensive line. We're going to raise the difficulty times 10.
Yeah.
We're going from rookie level to mega hard.
Yeah.
We're just going to scrap the offensive line.
It's a bold strategy, Cotton.
And we're going to do it again.
Yeah, and do it again without, you know, basically for the entirety of the second half of a season, without Tank Dell.
Without
Stephon Diggs.
Without anything resembling a number two receiver.
Without, I mean, it was just a body in the way, kind of. A right guard, Shaq Mason.
Turnstile.
Yeah.
Parked car.
It was pretty wild, but keep that, like, mindset.
And we're not even about regular parked cars. We're talking about, like, lemons. Right? Like, there was a Pinto, and there was a Gremlin, and there was a Yugo. Like, these were not Cadillacs out there just parked in front. These were the worst cars of all time.
I disagree.
Rusting out.
Shaq Mason was more so like
a Chevy Chevette.
He was a really, you were happy with that car, you know, in 2023. It ran really well. It still looked really good.
All right, it's a Chevy Monza.
It functioned, but then, like, that same model car that you have came out in 2024, and it changed the body style completely, and all of a sudden, you start looking at that, and you're like, damn, I want that. My car's a piece of crap, you know? I got to get rid of this thing. It's old. It's not in style anymore. And you start talk bad about your car. It's going to not treat you very well. You know, you need to change the spark plugs. It's got an oil leak. You know, it just doesn't run very well anymore. You need to replace the radiator. That's what happened to Shaq Mason.
So it was, he's a Chevy Corvair.
Corvair, not a Corvette.
Not a Corvette, a Corvair.
Corvair, what the hell is that? I don't even want to know. Was that like one of those El Camino looking things?
No, El Caminos are badass.
Well, the fixed up ones, they can be badass. The Texans, to me, in my opinion, are not yet near, certainly not at the top of this list in terms of teams that you'd like to talk about as having improved the most this offseason. But I want to know from you guys, and you can weigh into 713-572-4610, if you think, not could the Texans be like retroactively at or near the top of this list at season's end, but don't they need to be? Don't they absolutely need to have been one of the teams to improve the most this offseason? Well, not just because of the offensive line, though.
Sean, here's the crazy thing about the Texans. Like, we were talking about most improved teams.
The arrow's pointed up.
Even if they are significantly improved, what does that look like in terms of wins and losses? Right? Because they won 10 games.
Mm-hmm.
Even if they improved significantly, does that mean they win 13 games? Because the difference to me between a 10-win team and a 12-win team is pretty significant. And if you go from 12 to 14, it's like another exponential leap. It's only 2 wins. But it's an exponential leap. You're a 14-win team. That I think the Texans could be highly improved, and it might only result in three wins more. But I just think 13-4 is incredibly better than 10-7 is. That being said, I think they are right now greatly improved at the wide receiver position. I think they are greatly improved at the running back position. And I am praying to Lord above and baby Jesus that they are much improved on the offensive line.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's the big one for a lot of people. I think for the Texans to have been much improved in all of those areas, we have to see the season play out. There is giant question marks about the offensive line. There's a giant question mark about the Texans really at running back right now, today as we stand, because all we know about Joe Mixon is the last time somebody saw him, he was in a walking boot. And the Texans signed Nick Chubb, who's coming off of a torn ACL a couple of years ago, a broken foot last year. And how much does this guy have left in the tank? And then there's Damian Pierce, who hadn't done jack squat since his rookie year.
He had an excellent week 17.
And then, oh, by the way,
week 18,
the wide receiver situation, different outside of Nico Collins. Here's Christian Kirk. You don't know what to expect from him, though I feel like fans probably should have a better idea what to expect than they actually have in their minds. yeah, he missed a lot of games last year. It was a broken collarbone. It wasn't a ruptured Achilles or a torn ACL or anything like that. And he's been really good. But behind him, it's question marks. Jaden Higgins, Jalen Knoll, Dalton Schultz is a question mark in terms of how impactful he can really be. You can kind of go on and on down the list. And yes, it's very offensive centric. The Texans seem to do and press all the right buttons defensively. They've got a hell of a starting point, you know, as of 2 years ago, and they continue to some way, somehow just continue to stack more talent. They've added Sheldon Rankins again. They've added CJ Gardner-Johnson. They've, added EJ Speed, depth at linebacker. And maybe they still need to do a little bit more work in terms of adding depth to the secondary at corner specifically, because beyond Kamari Lassiter and Derek Stingley and MJ Stewart, who's played a pretty impactful role the last couple of years as a depth piece, Damon Arnett, okay, whatever. Like, you need insurance for the insurance in the case of him, and more on him later. But your key losses, Laremy Tunsil, Shaq Mason, Stephon Diggs, and you could include Tank Dell, I guess, because of injury, and he's not going to be playing this year. I could understand that. At the end of this season, for the Texans to accomplish what we, one, expect them to, one, obviously hope that they do, they're going to have to hit on many more of these things, players, changes, than not. And we didn't even mention new offensive coordinator, new play caller, and offensive line coach in Cole Popovich, I don't think.
Let me ask, what do you think about the amount of praise being thrown at Cole Popovich? I mean, Titus Howard can't stop talking about him. So the Texans have very much, and we've heard it with Kaylee too. To a man, everybody in the offense can't stop talking about how impressed they are with Nick Kaylee, who has done zero regular season work here. How much they love Cole Popovich, who was an assistant here last year, but now he's the head guy. And does live credence to the idea of there was tension in that offensive line room,
mm-hmm.
that the head offensive line coach and the assistant were not on the same page, that the linemen were not on the same page. And I do think it speaks volumes about what the Texans believe were their biggest issues last year on offense, that the OC is gone, the offensive line coach is gone, and the guys that were looked at as more finesse technique type offensive linemen are out.
Mm-hmm.
And they replaced them with guys who they believe are more mauler type offensive linemen.
What do I think about it? I'll be honest with you. When I first heard Titus Howard...
Sean, this is a talk show. You don't tell us what you think.
Okay.
You never tell us what you think.
Okay. So what should I do now? I'm Stuke. I don't know what to do. I thought of one guy, and it's not similar really in any way. It's already difficult because it's a cross-sport reference, but Joe Espada, because he was an incumbent before he became manager of the Astros, just like Cole Popovich. He came to my mind
for a long time
because he had that relationship, the respect from a lot of the players in the clubhouse, just like Cole Popovich. And you didn't hear Joe Espada's name mentioned.
Until
he got the job. You didn't hear Cole Popovich's name really mentioned until Strouser got fired. And then it was like, well, what the hell are we doing with this guy Popovich? He was there too. He was teaching him the wrong way too, right? Well, maybe not. And I think the more that we've learned this offseason, it's probably not the case. And in fact, it's certainly not the case. The Texans have, changed their philosophy in terms of the body type and the type of person, player that they want and need on the offensive line. So
they want offensive line to swarm like the defense.
100%. And so I think it's a great thing. It's always good, duh. Like when your players are speaking highly, certainly at a time where they don't really have to, of a coach or another player in the offseason. And boy, if you think these are the dog days of summer now, we just a week removed from OTAs, a mandatory minicamp. You just wait here in the next few weeks before training camp. It's going to be dead. And then what? It's going to be literally until the heart of training camp before any of that matters, or it doesn't matter what players and coaches say about each other. But it's encouraging. I like it. You still have to go out there and do it. But if the Texans are going to be an 11-win team, a 12-win team, if that matters much to you, it matters a little bit less to me and more so about what they do in the postseason. How many Super Bowls have the Baltimore Ravens played in the last 5, 6, 7 years? None?
Zero.
You know, and like, and what do they do every single season?
Every year you feel like they got a shot.
They got a shot. That's kind of the area that, you know, the Texans need to be in. Like somewhere
so you're
between,
telling me there's a chance.
Yes. Somewhere between like, you know, what the Ravens' yearly expectation is versus, hey, now you're in the postseason. Well, now what's the expectation? How many Baltimore fans or people, you know, looking at Baltimore expect them to, hey, go play and compete for a Super Bowl? Like after a while, when you win 11, 12, 13 games and you don't make it to the final game, you start to lose a little bit of faith. Hey, it's a fun regular season and a really entertaining playoffs.
Playoffs?
For a round or two, and then boom, you get the boot. Well, Texan fans clearly need to get to an AFC title game for them to feel like their team has improved significantly, right? If they win 10 games again this year, PC, but it's a really convincing 10 wins and it's competitive, they're going to play some really difficult teams just like they do every year. I don't care, first place schedule, last place schedule, guess who's going to be on it? The Chiefs and the Ravens and all those teams that are going to be there standing
in
your way at the end of the
season.
Other
teams that also play first place schedules?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, sorry, that's not an excuse to me.
No, I just said that.
I know, and I'm not agreeing with you. I'm agreeing with you. What I'm saying is a lot of people, I remember this from last year, people are like, oh, well, they have to play a first place schedule now. So does everybody you play against. You think in Kansas City, they're going, oh, we got to play a first place schedule. How are we going to win games?
Right.
You think they're saying that in Buffalo or in Baltimore? You think they're saying that in Philadelphia?
No.
You think they're saying that right now in Detroit?
No.
Yeah, no. We're the best. We're coming to kick your ass.
Yeah,
look, that's the attitude you should have.
And the kneecap off.
I said that last year when people were, you know, bitching and moaning about, like, the schedule. And look, it was a gauntlet last year. What was it, week 15 through 17?
Yeah, they played the three games in, like, 12 days.
I mean, that sucked. That was stupid.
All of those teams played three games in 12 days.
And you're right. And, hey, may the best team win. And, you know, Texans managed to get through it. And they won a playoff game. And we had a lot of fun along the way, and now it's time to take the next step. This year, you got to play the same, you know, some of the same really difficult teams that you did last year. It's not like this gauntlet, and you should feel better about this team, I think, going into this season, because the one guy, it always comes down to one guy that you hitch everything to, CJ Stroud, this is year three, man. And if everything that you've believed and even have enjoyed the first couple of years, mainly that first rookie season, but I think it was very impressive what he accomplished last year too, with as bad as everything was around him and the injuries and stuff like that, you should feel really great about this guy, like having gone through adversity and seeing what he can do in year three. That's going to be fun. If you'd like to weigh in on that, hit us up. We'll get back to some Texans a little bit later on as well. 713-572-4610. 572-4610 is how you can be part of the show.
I'm with you on the CJ Stroud thing, and I think there's a lot there that seems to fly under the radar, especially at the national level.
Mm-hmm.
And also, did you happen to see those Gold Cup games around the country?
No.
And that there's what's going on in the crowd?
No.
Well, I can tell you what was going on in the crowd, because it may be about to impact Major League Baseball today.
Ooh, fun times. Goal! Next.
It's my favorite position to watch.
Sports Radio 610 presents The Drive with Sterner and Hughley.
All right, and for The Drive, we're Area 45, alongside Patrick Creighton, Sean Bajani. T-Mill's still here, doing his thing, helping us out until 6 o'clock. Time now for our segment we call Hot Leads. We kind of go over the day's top stories. You're used to that at 5 o'clock with the 5 o'clock fire. But here's how we do it on Area 45. We'll start with the Astros, man. Their series finale against the Sacramento A's tonight. Whatever. That's how I'll dub them.
Can't say homeless ass?
Well, can't say homeless ass. Yeah, that's you. You like the homeless
ass.
They're
the homeless ass.
They are ass. They have been that this series against the Astros. We'll see what Colton Gordon has in store for him tonight. He'll be on the mound against Jacob Lopez. How good has Colton Gordon been for the Astros? He's not allowed more than 3 earned runs in either one of his first 6 starts this season. The Astros have won 5 of his 6 starts, and he's walked just 2 guys combined in his last 5 outings for the Astros, and then threw a season-high 6 innings in his last start against the Minnesota Twins. So Colton Gordon will be on the mound tonight. Boy, last night was a lot of fun, though. Astros, I didn't realize this, but they pounded out 20 hits, scored 11 more runs. I think, yes, in fact, Colin was right. Our producer, who you heard on In the Loop today for Figgy, I think he was right when he'd said it's the first time all season long when the Astros scored back-to-back double-digit runs. Why not do it against the A's? Make it the trifecta tonight. Over under, Tyler. Runs scored this evening by the Houston Astros. I'll put it at 6.5.
Oof. As a betting man, I would bet the under if I had to pick one.
Yeah.
But obviously, fingers crossed, toes crossed.
Jacob Lopez intimidates you at all?
Cheeks clenched for over. What?
Said Jacob Lopez's intimidates you?
Oh, no. No, not much about that team does.
It shouldn't. I mean, I wouldn't hesitate to take the over. You know, YOLO, scared money don't make money. I think a wise man once said, Tyler Milner.
That's me?
Yeah, that should sound familiar.
Wisdom is.
So what's the over-under on this game? It's 10.5. It's Colton Gordon and Jacob Lopez.
Mm-hmm.
Colton Gordon, 2-1, 470, 134 whip.
Award 3 runs to the A's right now, because that's what Colton Gordon usually allows through 5-6 innings of work.
Jacob Lopez, 1-4, 480 ERA, 150 whip.
Mm-hmm.
They've both thrown 30 innings. Lopez gets more strikeouts, also gives up more walks. They've both given up 6 homers in 30 innings, so they both give up the long ball.
I'd take the over in this game.
This might be an over game.
Yeah, I would take the over.
I mean, look, it's a PCL ballpark. And we know if that you're playing a PCL game and you're not playing in Sugarland, you're not playing in OKC, ball flies.
Yeah. Ooh. You know, I don't think Tyler has this.
I mean,
on
how many 430-foot home runs have we seen in the last 3 days?
Probably like 3.
I think probably more like 6.
I mean, your 400 footers, like there's only been one guy to hit 2 guys hit fewer than 400-foot home runs. It was Mauricio Dubon and Christian Walker this series. They were like 385 and maybe like 396 or something like that for Walker. But T-Mill, I would bet on Cam Smith hitting a home run tonight. He's already got 2-3 this series. Does he have 3 home runs this series?
Who's that?
Cam Smith.
He's got 2 homers.
I know that ball must be looking like a damn beach ball to him.
Yeah.
Dude, when you're in a groove, everything is, like, your eyes are just huge.
Mm-hmm.
And it's funny. It's like, not only do you see the ball, it looks bigger. It feels slower. No matter how hard it's coming, it feels slower. It feels like you're picking up the spin on the ball right away, and you are completely in tune with how the ball is going to break. When you're in a groove, everything just clicks.
Mm-hmm.
When you're struggling, the ball looks small. It always feels fast. You can never get the right spin on the seam. You're always just a hair off. Because that hair is everything, right? Baseball, a game of inches.
Yeah.
If you're a half inch off on where you make contact with the ball, that's the difference between a line drive double in the gap and a pop-up.
That guy Ferguson that was pitching for the A's last night, who the Astros absolutely tattooed, I think, for 6 runs.
Spank the hiney.
An A's fan on Twitter put a video together and showed why the Astros were most likely as successful as they were against him. You talk about a game of inches. He was tipping his pitches last night. Guy throws fastball, curveball. And it was just something he was doing with his glove and his wrist cock. Like when he threw a fastball, his wrist was just kind of straight up and down. When he was throwing the curveball, it was, you know, kind of cocked down a little bit.
Hey, we saw that with Hunter a couple of years ago.
Yeah. The guy it was everything. Everything was just spot on. And it was just pitch after pitch after pitch. And you could tell. And you started to notice, like, oh, yeah, Astro pitchers can absolutely tell what's coming before the ball's even thrown, before he's even through his windup or stretch motion. That was kind of cool. And it's just it is a very odd thing. Like, teams know this about opposing pitchers, but the teams that know this about opposing pitchers, why or how they're not able to communicate these things to their own guys and stop them from doing it, it's pretty remarkable to me. Now, not trying to give the A's more credit than they deserve. I don't know how many of their actual hitters have the knowledge or an ability to pick up, like, tipping pitches on their opposition, much less their own guys. But, hey, more the merrier. But, see if the Astros can take advantage tonight.
You know, when you have good coaches or sharp players, that they find, right? These are, like, this is one of the things Carlos Beltran was so good at.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things Alex Cora was so
Alex
good
Cora
at.
Too, yeah.
You know, there are, Lance Berkman was really good at picking up things like this. There are players who are really good at finding that slight tell that a pitcher gives off to know what's coming.
Yeah, yeah.
And throughout baseball, there have always been guys who can just figure stuff out like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when I, not that this was a taught skill or anything, but, you know, Keith Hernandez was a guy who was really good at identifying any kind of change in the way a pitcher stands, holds, sets up, delivers, to figure out what's coming. So me, being a smaller kid growing up playing baseball, because I was always the smallest guy on the team.
Until
I didn't grow until my junior year of high school. So I was always somebody who was looking for, is there a way that I can tell what's going on? You know, and I would tell you that if you are a kid who is playing sports and you're on the smaller side, you're not as big, you're not as strong, you're not as fast, you've got to find ways.
Oh, you always got to find the
ways to get that competitive advantage. Yeah. So I used to study that stuff like crazy.
Yeah, yeah. Look at you, forward-thinking ass. Hey.
Of course, I had no idea that it was something that, you know, 40 years later I'd be talking about.
Well,
but, you know, just
happens
same
that
thing
way.
You know, I grew up playing hockey. I played hockey, you know, almost, you know, my entire childhood and, you know, through my mid-20s. And you'd always look for, you know, how does a guy carry a puck a certain way? Does a team break out in a certain formation? When they come out in that formation, where does the puck usually go? You look for their tells. You look for their trends. Same thing with, like, a pitcher. If you have a pitcher who, you know, is always, after a breaking ball, always throws his fastball to a certain side of the plate. Right? Is it always an outside fastball after a breaking ball?
Or where they stand on the rubber, like, you know, to throw a particular pitch.
Yeah. And, you know, these are things that you look for because that's your advantage.
One more story in Hot Leads is what we have time for. The Rockets and head coach Ime Udoka, we haven't mentioned this at all today. They've reached a long-term contract extension.
Back the truck up for Ime.
Don't know how long or for how much, but
I thought it said 5 years.
I didn't even see years in Shams' initial report, but that would definitely confirm a long-term contract extension. We don't know how much. That thing is for certain. We'll talk a little bit more about that as we hit the 4 o'clock hour, get you more of the specifics next with the Rockets and Ime Udoka's extension. Keep it here. It's Area 45 for The Drive.
Sarah Jessica Parker, man, she's always done it for me.